Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
This is Garen Swing. You're listening to Rebel Radio. Fuck you, Josh.
What's up? This is Rebel Radio.
What up? What up? This is DJ Newmark.
This is Peanut Butter Wolf.
It's your boy. It's okay.
Keep checking out Rebel Radio.
Rebel Radio.
This is Rebel Radio.
We're in the place right here. Rebel Radio is going down.
Would you say Rebel Radio?
Oh, wait. Let's do it again.
Rebel Radio.
What's up, Rebels? Welcome back to Rebel Radio, the weekly show where I bring you the rebels who are shaping our culture. I'm your host, Josh Levine. This week, we're back with our Artwork Rebels series in partnership with Gorilla One and co-hosted by my man, Eddie Donaldson. If you're buying art for yourself, your home, your office, your business, your brand, whatever, your hotel, hit up Eddie, find Gorilla One online, or hit me up and I'll connect you. Eddie is your connection to all things street art and art, period. We dig in today with Garen Swing, super talented artist. He's got this crazy Ganesh Eastern influenced meets street art, really cool style going. And Garen is the interior designer for so many of LA's great nightlife establishments. We have a really fun conversation. We shot it on site at, now I'm going to forget the name of the shop downtown. Forgive me. I'll post it in the show notes. Lots of amazing stories, you know, really digging into the connection between street art and interior design and high and low culture. And Garen has, he's spent a lot of time in the celebrity culture around LA and kind of talks about the ins and outs of that and what it's meant for him and his career and what it's meant for our culture overall. Really fun. I'm excited to share it with you. Let's get into it now with Garen Swing. Yeah, man. Well, I'm excited to talk to you guys.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I love the stuff you're doing. I want to talk about how we got here and where we're going and all that stuff. How do you guys know each other?
How don't we know each other?
Yeah.
That's okay.
Yeah.
Question. Yeah, me and Garen met probably 1988, 89, 90, something like that.
Yeah, for sure. Because Eddie was around and we were around and I don't know the actual, you know, because I don't think it was an actual intro.
That, sure.
You know, I mean, it was this is Eddie, you know,
yep.
But because all of a sudden we're just in the same group.
Just
we're
everywhere.
Saying, you know, yeah. Eddie's there. And you know, and growing up in Los Angeles, you know, it's, besides it being clicky, it's a melting pot,
mm-hmm.
You know, and especially someone like myself, I have no shame in my game. I mean, there's one day where I probably was breakdancing, and then the next day I'm like modeling.
Right.
And then the next day I'm like skating.
Yeah.
So you know, we have a very diverse culture, and you know, and I think Eddie's very mixed up in that.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, 100%. You know, so you know, and you know, a lot of people razz, you know, Eddie about that. You know, in a funny sense, you know,
yeah.
You know.
But I think that's for a lot of us. That's like a whole way of being, right? And like
well,
you said,
I think it's LA culture.
LA is kind of built for that.
Yeah, I think it's LA culture.
Absolutely.
If you're from LA and you know, and you're in the LA scene, and you weren't in a hip hop or and I mean, even just take it back a step, like if you weren't even in a new wave or some stuff when you're in high school, even you're lying, you know what I mean? Because see, the way I was brought up is you know, I was born in Beverly Hills.
Okay.
And my parents are designers and third generation designers. A little bit about myself, and at the time I guess you'd say is yeah, from junior high and elementary, you know, preppy was in.
Yeah.
You know, Lacoste,
for sure.
you know. Yeah, exactly. That was so in, you know, and it was in you know, in a way that, so when your parents, like, you know, these are like quality problems, like poor me, you know, we'd take this place in Westwood. It was called At Ease.
Okay.
And it was like, they had like a big sale.
Okay.
And my, I remember my dad going there and he would buy me a pink Lacoste.
Uh-huh.
And then like some plaid pink and blue, you know, some of the colors I have now,
sure.
You know, shorts maybe match, you know, and maybe a pair of Vans. And that was really in. And for me personally, that's not who I wanted to be at all.
Yeah.
And you know, and I'd see people that I want to be. Like, I want to be with, and it's not that I want to be them. I want to, it was my culture is really what it is. Like, like surfing, skating, you know, musically. You know, if you had a concert t-shirt in junior high, I went to public school, you know, if you had a concert shirt, that was like, you were kind of like a main man.
Right.
Like
yeah,
you know,
for
or,
sure.
Or even like a town and country surf shirt. Like, cause there's certain stuff that wasn't available. And that same thing with culture of shoes and whatnot, you know? So when I went to public school for the first time, I got bussed immediately. And then it was all black school.
Yeah.
And you know, it's definitely like the, you either join or beat them type situation. You know, I saw fist fight for the first time, all this stuff. And I just loved the whole culture. I mean, it was dancing, music, you know, and you know, and you hear a lot about this, you know, in a sense, like you got to pick a lane, you know? Like, I wasn't a rapper, I wasn't a gangster, I wasn't in a gang, you know, and for me, dancing and art, you know, so I was drawing in 85 little things, you know?
Do you remember the sort of the spark? You said you grew up, your parents were artists and designers of art for you. When did?
Oh, immediately.
Yeah.
So, because I did go to a nice school, and a you know, an expensive private school, my art was sent to the White House in fourth grade.
Okay.
Yeah, for display.
Nice.
And I think because, you know, I look back.
Fourth grade,
now,
that's Reagan?
No, prior to, I don't know. I met Reagan. Oh, you know what? It might've been, because I met Reagan because I was hanging around a real white collar situation going to Buckley, because I had a friend and his parents took us to the Beverly Hills Hotel or something, and Reagan had a whole like thing there, and I remember shaking his hand. So I shook Reagan's hand. I remember being a kid, like being like fun, like going like hi, but I don't think he was present at the time.
Okay,
I don't think he was present at the time.
One thing to think about with Garen is your dad was an artist.
Yeah, I mean my father, I mean, like I said, I was third generation designer. So my father, my mother decorated Michael Jackson's house.
Oh wow.
So you know, when you talk about like the culture and my mom, which is even funnier, and I wish I knew the names, but I didn't know this until actually recently. My mother predominantly designed black entertainers.
Oh wow.
I didn't know, because what happens, you know, it's just like LA for me. Like, why am I in the rock and roll business? Like, why am I on every rock star's house there is and whatnot? And so when she did the Mike Jackson's home, because they were so involved in the industry, I guess she did like their manager's home.
Else.
And it just came in.
It's just a network.
Came in. And that's my story too. I mean, there's no shame in it. I mean, starting off with Eddie and Danny Boy and being in this culture of LA, and I worked at this place called The Living Room and just worked, and Drew Barrymore worked there.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's like, you know, and that's where Stussy is, like First and La Brea.
Yep.
And so I worked there when I was like 17, 18, maybe.
Wow.
You know, and so I was catapulted into the, like right in the heart of the
A-list.
What
was The Living Room?
That was Robert Cass's joint. It was like
it was
a coffee
bar.
Shop. It was a bar. It was an actual coffee shop. Okay.
Yeah,
first.
I think I remember.
Okay,
I
so this is, this,
that's
is,
why I was at.
This is great, like history for me. And I think just in general, like the nuance of it.
Yeah.
There was no Starbucks.
Right, yeah.
There was a place on Beverly, and I wanted to play, it was called like Jazz or Java or something.
So Insomnia, and, there was Insomnia. Well,
okay, same location as Insomnia. I did Insomnia also.
Oh, you did?
For John Dunn.
Okay.
Yeah, I did the one in the Valley. That's all. So, but prior to that place, but yeah, it's the same location. And inside, it was similar how they had Insomnia. It was all white.
Mm-hmm.
And then they had these cappuccinos or happy lattes that were in this white, clear glass. And they would make them. And I remember going there with Paul Gelinas and Brian, because we were going to clubs when we were 15.
Sure.
You know, and so we, after this club scene or like going to Cat House, you know, and whatnot, we would go to this place. And I remember being completely, I go to any hot club there is, not think twice about walking in the front door, taking a bottle from Axl Rose. But this place, scared the fucking shit out of me. It was like an art museum.
Okay.
And when you walked in there, people just were like, hey, and you just get a cup of coffee. You know, it was so, everyone in there wearing black and so chic and drinking coffee. And it was so queer to me, like, going there getting these $10 things. And I remember coming there one night and we like ordered a drink and we drank our little drink. And I remember having hot chocolate. It was like a hot chocolate and coffee. It's different. And I wasn't making a coffee. I drank my thing and I ran out. And I remember running out with the fucking tip jar. They had a big tip jar of cash. And I remember like,
amazing.
Like Damiano's back in the day. Like you're hungry for pizza, like go to Damiano's. You just run out the whole pan, you know, run down Fairfax with the whole pan, like wasted. But
that's hilarious.
But and so Robert Cass opened up the first like Italian coffee shop, and it had espressos, panini makers, and he did it all gold and maroon, which at the time was like the hottest thing. And he asked if I wanted a job there, and I helped with doing like full finishing, and that kind of sparked off my whole career in a sense of the professional side of my career.
So it sounds like art's part of your life from day one.
Yeah, I mean, all I did is go to art school.
Is there a moment when it becomes a career? Was it that, or was there a decision?
It's actually a funny moment that actually has to do, like, I mean, more or less with Eddie in a sense. We're 20 years old. I got back from Europe. I was doing something like this modeling job that I did for a free trip or whatever, but and when I got back, I knew where to stay. And I can't stay with my parents for a minute, and that didn't work out. And then I was living with Danny Boy and Eric, and they were living in a one-bedroom apartment, which I saw Lior the other day, and I thought Lior's parents owned the building. Mm. It turns out it was Josh Abraham's parents owned the building.
Okay.
So at the time, I thought House of Pain was a gang because we all hung out together, and we talked about rapping or whatever, music, but that's just our lifestyle. It wasn't like, I didn't really think of it as like, musically, like I never thought ever once it would be, it's just a side thing. We had our real hustles going on, what I mean? Like, it was never like, to me, it wasn't real.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'll never forget Danny Boy coming home, and I believe he had a big wad of cash on him too. He goes, dude, we just got signed. And I was like, what? He's like, we got signed, we're going on tour. And for me at the time, I thought, dude, we go out every night and fight. We fight every night.
Yeah.
Like, we go out and we're drinking and bumping, and someone's yelling, what? It's House of Pain. Like, boom. And someone's getting punched, and we're yelling House of Pain. Like, it's a gang. And it's our crew. It's our fucking, this is like our boys. Like, it wasn't even, I never thought it was a rap band or a thing. It was just our crew, like El Diablo. Like, just who we were, And I didn't know rules of motorcycle clubs. I didn't know. I didn't know anything. We're 20. Sure. We're hanging out with Vagos and Hell's Angels and doing shit that I probably am surprised I didn't get my ass like beat. I just go with the Booyah Tribe and bounce them in the belly. I walk right up to them like, what's up, dude? Boom. And I bounce out like in their belly, like just a drunk, skinny 20-year-old. Like, I can't believe they just pulled me aside and whipped my ass. Like, teach you a lesson of respect. Sure. But the fact of the matter is, I was like, no, I'm starting a faux finish business. I'm starting an art business.
Okay.
And he looked at me like I was crazy. He's like, what are you talking about? I'm like, I'm starting this business where I'm going to start a business doing decorative painting. And he's like, and Danny like called me out. He's like, dude, he's like, any monkey can sponge. And he pulled out this wad of cash. He's like, this is real money, And I thank him for that. Because I'm the kind of guy, and I didn't realize this until especially recently, like, bring it. I accept your challenge. I'm sorry, crying. I didn't think about it. Because that's what it's like for me, it was about like art, street art, all of it. Yeah, it's battling. It's like, I'll show you.
Sure.
Every time I've done some art in a crazy way, like, oh yeah, like let's do this.
Yeah, no.
Let's fucking do this. Like you say I'm fucking this or that or like that. And then the crazy part is no one's really saying it. It's like crazy. But in my mind, it's like that's the way it's been since day one. My parents told me I couldn't be an artist. You're like, oh, that's great, but what are you gonna do when you grow up? And I've won awards in junior high for student film festivals, two of them. So many accolades and awards. If I went down my resume and I really stop and think about anything, it's my career is heavy. I mean, art directing you name the spectrum, if it has to do with color or paint, I'm like punching at it.
I mean, it's so interesting. We talk about this all the time, how, graffiti, hip hop in particular, they're competitive arts, right? And it's different than rock and roll is different than fine art. Obviously, business is competitive, period.
I have to argue that. I think, because I'm good friends with other artists, musically, I get the DMs, or not DMs. Yeah, I did it really now. It's a, you know, the sending, you know, not, but because they are battling. Look what so-and-so did, da-da-da. It's not like the same, because, but it is kind of, it's, because there's no one's actually coming at me. Like hard. It's not like we're, because I'm not that kind of graffiti artist. Let me be clear. I'm not in the street crossing off or fighting over turf or disrespect of mine or this.
Right.
It's more of an underlying, like, situation.
Is it though?
Yes, you know, it's because it's nothing out in the open. Because
I'm not talking about you specifically.
Because if it was out in the open, it'd be handled. It would be a different conversation.
Well, look, first of all, I think all of creativity is competitive on some level, and all of business is competitive. No question about that, right? I think my take on it is that within graffiti, street art, hip-hop.
Yeah, hip-hop. That's what's really for
culturally,
sure.
Culturally. That competition is more overt, right? Yes. Battling is part of the culture.
Let's break it down.
I'm sure artists, since there were two artists.
Hold on. I got it. The graffiti, hip hop and graffiti are the only two artistic expressions that I know where there's open battles.
Right.
That's what I'm saying, right? And it's part of the culture.
We go to Belmont, we battle the crew. Breakdancers have battles. We're going to meet on the corner and we're going to battle.
Right.
I don't see fine artists saying, I'm going to meet you on Melrose and we're going to battle. And I also don't see Axl Rose saying, bring your guitar down the freaking, or Dave Navarro.
Right.
We're going to battle at the museum today. Right. You know, it just doesn't happen. So Josh is right to a certain extent.
I get what you're saying too. Yeah. Absolutely,
it's just done in a different way, you know, in a more underlying like, huh?
Sure,
you know,
of course. But I think that's part of the
party. You know, it's just, I mean, it's saying the same thing in a different language.
I think that's part of the success of the genre of the art form. Right? Is that like aggressive competition? That right?
That's where
the reason why in 40 years. Hip hop and graffiti has infiltrated every aspect of society.
I mean, just Black history is—it's really nice that it's being brought up to the general public and everyone's woke and all. But the reality of culture, from dance to clothing to music, art—it is so much of our culture that it's so ingrained we don't even realize it. And because, and this isn't any way my objective at all, but yeah, of course, of corporations and buy it and sell it back to, you know, America. That's just business. I mean, if the moral majority they're saying to is, you know, rich white kids, well, that's the fucking market. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So it's, you know, but to give respect to all of everything that I am into. 100%.
Of course.
You know, I'm not into country music and something where I can look back and go, well, you know, the history of country music and what I'm about and the white folk or nothing like that. For me personally, I couldn't even hop on. I can't even. Culturally.
So, to me, there's something really interesting. I think your art is, or your career really kind of embodies the sort of relationship between high and low, between the streets and luxury. Yeah. Right, where you kind of play, I mean, a lot of, you know, we talk about this all the time, right? That a lot of the artists we grew up with are now, you know, have pieces in museums and et cetera. But I think your career even more so, right? Because you're designing restaurants and hotels and luxury environments.
Yeah. I'm very like blessed to be able to say like, oh yeah, like, oh my God, I mean, no, like I'm a gallery aspect of it, you know. $250,000 piece hanging in the entry of a hotel.
Sure.
You know, and to have something like that, or, I mean, I want to say it's a $175,000 piece in a crate in the Hard Rock, because they just buy so much, like crazy money, that one piece is hanging and the other parts are just crated with a Noah's Ark of art that they just buy and purchase. So there's one part where it's like, that's what I do for a living. You know, and there's another part where I want to share my art,
of course,
things and get out there. And ultra culturally too, I want to be able to get out to the masses and let people enjoy it. You know, I think there's a, you know, it, just the art in general is a very, that's a, obviously it's a show, you know, about it. I mean, it's I want to say that it's a very hard business because there's so many talented artists out in the world, like beyond, and there's so many good businessmen. Mm-hmm. And to get to put this together in some way is a very complicated, you know, formula to get your work out there and whatnot. And, so and we have this conversation a
what's
lot.
What's the formula?
To be a good artist, obviously. And you don't have to be a good artist, actually. No, if I'm really gonna like put it out there,
okay.
You need to have to be able to produce, sell, and run a business. Mm-hmm. And I think if you have these formulas and consistency, time, it's a guaranteed success. And it's because a lot of people put in time and they don't put enough time and then they change it. For me personally, I have this theory that I've come up with that everything in life is 4 to 7 years. So
okay. It
goes across the board. If you put your time into something for 4 years, that's great. But 7 years, you become what's called a journeyman. Mm-hmm. It means you've like kind of got your trade down. Mm-hmm. You're not a master, but you understand your trade. I don't care mm-hmm. if it's sewing, surfing, whatever. It's consistently doing something like an athlete. You know, if you look at it with school, it's the same thing. You want to be a doctor, 7 years. You want to go to college, 4 years. But every time you stop something, you have to start back to beginning again.
Right.
I don't care what it is. You could be a bartender for 10 years and you start and you want to be a cook. Guess what? Day one, I'm a cook.
So how does that play out in your career?
So with me, I've consistently been doing the same thing for 30 years. Mm-hmm. With that being said, I've tried to stay really focused because it's easy to get unfocused, especially the kind of artist that I am, in the sense that I have a, I want to say, very well-rounded. So being well-rounded, like example, I was asked to be in an art show a couple nights ago, I think it was last night, and a bunch of other artists, I know they're in it. And the idea is that an artist takes her photography and then the artist that she has chose for the show does their interpretation of the cool. photography. And I look at it and she sent a couple other references and stuff. And I thought, what do I want to do? You know, and the idea is I thought, I'm just gonna just do like a realistic painting just to fuck with everybody. Like, just go and just do it, like, boom, you know what I mean? Because I feel that I'm that talented.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, what am I doing that for? Ego, da 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 da. But the point is that's a decision that sometimes I have to make to stay focused. Because if I start, it's like a jack of all trades, master of none. You know, like, if you start getting too unfocused and doing all these things, I'm soon doing portraits and soon doing this. You know, someone hit me up the other day and saying about my silk screen. They said, oh, is that hand-painted? And I said, oh, it's hand-pulled. And they said, you know, like, said, pussy. And I'm like, it's because they know I can do it. They know I can hand-paint it. They know I can airbrush it. They know that I can do other things. But I'm trying to stay consistent towards the style and trade of what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. And so with that, I believe comes success.
You know? Yeah, I get it. I also think, you know, I would assume you also need sometimes that 100%. Diversion, right? You need to 100%. Go do something that's fun.
Yeah.
To be able to do all the other stuff.
I'm one of those guys that walks, you know, I really, really resonated last night that I walk away from confrontation, not because I'm a pussy, because I'm kind of like the opposite. I have to walk away from situations because I'm scared of, and it's a fight or flight for me. Mm-hmm. And I'm scared of my actions or what I'm going to say. Mm-hmm. And I've learned that just walk away, give it 24 hours. And it's funny because I don't think I have anger issues or violent or anything crazy, but you know, what I think and what I say are two different things. And I've learned that, you know what, these are just like to walk away, you know, in situations. So a lot of times, you know, I get in these situations where I'm people pleasing or hot dogging, and then also I'm like, you know what, I have to walk away from this situation, you know? You know, that's a hard thing to do too. You know, I don't burn bridges. I fucking follow through on everything. I'll take a hit before I, you know, in LA, you're only as good as your last, you know, your last advance.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I'm sure you know, you've been on tour.
Yeah.
You can be on tour, the whole tour, be the number one fucking dog, man, the best fucking manager, whatever your title is, and you miss the bus on the last day, they'll remember you for the rest of this fucking your career. That guy, the guy that we had to like turn the bus around, the guy that we had to fly out because he fucking forgot the microphone, like whole European tour number one. Last day you missed the bus because you're hungover.
Yeah.
Everyone's gonna remember you the rest of life being a hungover guy who fucked the whole tour up. You know?
Yeah.
And so I know that. And I know that so I'm always as good as my last advance. So I follow through on everything and I always, and I'm like an athlete, I give it number one. I try to give 100%.
I mean, that's such a great life lesson, right? Like, you know, you can be so great at so many things and the one little thing can trip you up, right? And so I always look at that, like, what do I want people to remember at the end of this?
Well, that's hence where I am right now.
Okay, tap, chat,
left, right. Cool. All right, we got about 30 minutes.
Okay. Yeah, so on that note, that's where I changed my career. And Eddie, you know, like I said, I give a lot of shine on that as, you know, around 2010, 11 maybe, you know, I did a little art piece. You know, I had the stencil for 30 years that I've been doing.
Yeah, which let's talk about that for a second. Yeah. So
that's a good story.
I have an old black male with a bad memory, right? That's been my line for 10 years. He posted a stencil of this Ganesh and I had the spiritual art gallery.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yo, you should be a street artist. Come do a stencil. Where did you make that up? And he's like, dude, this was from the opium den. I'm like, in my head, I'm like, you did what? You designed the opium den? Which I had no recollection of at all when I was probably stopped by while he was doing it. And he came and did a stencil on the sidewalk in front of the gallery. And the next thing you know, he's like building half concrete pieces.
Oh, my God. Full circle. It didn't even like put two and two together. In 95, I did this opium den for Brent Boldhouse. Mm-hmm. It might have been before that, 90, but it was around that time. And I was remember 95 is because I did the whole place, like how I did the front here.
Yeah.
I did the whole opium den. Yeah. Like the inside, we walk in, had all this like this whole stencil vibe. Like, here's what I do now.
So the full circle is?
I did the whole opium den. When you walked in, it was all like stencils and wall washing.
Yeah, I remember.
Exactly what I did out front. A little different colors, reds and greens and stuff. Same exact thing. And I did an art show inside with all my art. Same style that I do now, but just not as the palette wasn't pastels.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so it's just ironic that I just thought that. Yes, I did this art show then there and all these pieces there.
And the next thing you know, Garen's building faux concrete pieces with the Ganesh.
Yeah.
Slash is in the gallery taking photos.
Well, here, wait. This is. I'm going to talk about this and this at the same time. You have two things going on. You said how your life can change in a second for your last advance. So that's a big social media thing right now. And that's a big nuance too of 95 with like when I worked for Tommy and Pam and all this stuff that back then there was no social media.
Right.
So you were only as good as when Eddie would say, this is Garen, an artist. So my whole life I was introduced as this is Garen, an artist. This is Gil. He's an artist. That's how you rolled back then. Mm-hmm. It wasn't that you introduced and someone maybe say what your titles or what you're good at. This guy does da da da. So here we are, cut back to Eddie in 2010. He says, dude, what is this? What'd you just post up? I'm like, oh, it's da da da. Well, he goes, come down tomorrow night. We're doing Fame Fest. And they had all these food trucks. That was very innovative.
Mm-hmm.
10 years ago, the food truck thing was not popping.
Right.
It was, but just wasn't.
Started.
It just started.
Yeah, not like now.
Well, look this way. If you look at LA and Los Angeles being the pinnacle of like the new, as far as I'm concerned, you know, we don't realize it. We're like, oh, food trucks. No, if it started here in Melrose 10 years ago, that was the scene starting, as far as I'm concerned.
So
what I'm saying is like at this time, this was the newest thing of this food truck craze. And there's three or four from the front.
Yep.
And he's like, come down. I'm like, he's like, dude, bring what you got. I just took a bucket, put my stencil in, threw a couple cans in there, a couple rattle cans, showed up, and I'm like, I'm here. He's like, where do you want me to hit? He goes, right here on the sidewalk. And I just did right there on Melrose on the sidewalk, so I do my thing. And this is in about 2012 at the time when I actually, and Instagram just came out.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember having the first hashtags. They'd be like Melrose, Ganesh, like, you know, there was, because you'd see, you'd say, like, you'd just put in there, be like one picture.
Sure.
And it was so fresh, you know, at the time. Man. But I will say it went viral. It went viral. I could see people tagging me, almost more than today.
Yeah.
In a weird, funny
way. Well, that's because it was exciting.
It was new.
It was so viral.
Sure.
And I remember like seeing people tagging my art. Then we did a whole campaign. But at that time, there was people around me and I mean, it was dope. I'm not going to fucking lie. Well, there was flashes of cameras and because, you know, they had cameras.
But what was cool about it was that we brought spirituality and street art together. Let's address that. Not about me, but that's what was happening.
Oh, no, it's all about me.
So no one was doing a Ganesh stencil.
Right. Yeah.
There was no spiritual anything on the streets like
that. Well, there was more for that. They were on Eddie. And he brought, I mean, there was guys that are, like you mentioned, street artists are in galleries today that I don't know if they would be in the same gallery today.
Right. So, you know, thinking about that time and, you know, you're talking about House of Pain and Pam and Tommy and, you know, it was a really small community here in LA that was setting the pace for the whole world. And I think to some extent that's still true, but now we have social media. Now stars can come from anywhere. Culture, 100%. It's a lot more democratized than it was. Let's say in the 80s, 90s, when we kind of, you know, and we talk about this all the time, when you used to walk down the street and you see people you know who are making shit happen on a global scale, right? And now it's much more dispersed.
Yeah, 100%.
What do you take from that era, from having lived through and come up in that era? What do you bring with you into today?
Well, unfortunately, I don't know if it's an age thing, but I feel like I missed a mark. But I actually hold on to it dearly, and I'll explain. Growing up with, and to say like it is, growing up and slept with celebrities and household names and whatnot as my actual friends, I would find it odd to say, hey, Slash or Tommy, could we take a picture together?
Right.
When I was on tour, that's where I got it. When I went on tour with House of Pain, I was so infatuated with that vibe that we bought a digital in every market, would take photos at every show and then drop them off at the next one. And then Esteban was on the road with us taking pictures too.
Right.
And I was blessed to really be able to capture all that. I didn't keep the photos, but that's kind of where I got that whole I'm down.
Well, I got photos now. I will see the nuance of it. And so I just finished the HBO documentary.
Oh yeah.
On the nuance of kind of what we're talking about is that, so with the Tommy and Pam sex scandal.
Yep.
So I was accused of stealing the tape.
Okay.
Didn't you?
No, I wish. Well, I don't wish, but I mean, like, and, you know, it's like, you know, being accused of like beating someone, you're like, after it all goes down, you're like, fucking, I wish I did now.
Sure,
you know what I mean? Like, Tommy and Pam were the Kardashians of today.
Yeah, for sure.
And so if I'm their interior designer, their in-house artist, their clown gesture, best friend, I mean, literally, I was dressed in drag some nights. Pam would, I mean, doing drugs like a fucking salad bar of them. You know, doing all kinds of paintings. I did a 20-foot by 40-foot mural for them in their elevator shaft from hell to heaven. I did 3 paintings for them. I did a 5x4 painting of like this thing of Pamela commissioned me for. All, I mean, just, they were just, bought, I did the infamous leather swing for them above the piano, painted, nice. You know, I can go on and on.
Incredible.
My dad ended up designing our house in the end. It was fantastic.
Okay.
Yeah. Being 25 years old, working with this kind of celebrity status. Well, not taking pictures at the time, no social media, I get no shine. If this was today, I'd be a famous interior designer.
Yeah.
You know? But back to the art thing. So here we are, fast forward. Eddie brings me into the street art scene and says, established, does an article. Lisa Volcone, Gregory Siff's manager, writes a very kind article, says, established artist goes back to street art. Because typically street art starts here and goes here.
Yeah.
I kind of did the opposite.
So before we get kicked out of here, you got to teach me. So you kind of live in the high and low at the same time, right? In the luxury space. No. In terms of like designing, you know, beautiful luxury environments, also street art.
So I'm doing is I'm trying to take street art and elevate it.
Okay.
And I'm taking couture and I'm trying to have fun with it in a camp way.
Yeah.
You know, my personal first, you know, I started off with the Ganeshes and, you know, and trying to elevate my street art. You know, I was doing, like you said, the concrete. I was using tar, gold leaf, concrete, trying to use earth elements, you know, trying to change things around to not just typically just, you know, just take spray paint and just hit piece. You know, a lot of street artists were literally taking, you know, not to smash on them, but look like trash from the street. Maybe it was a board they found in an alley.
Yeah, found objects.
That was called found objects. Like found objects. That's so fucked. I said trash. I better up my vocabulary. Thank you. Seriously, like, I'm gonna use that.
It's all good.
No, found objects.
Found objects.
Yeah. Upcycling. Yeah. And trust me, I'm the king of it. You know, trust me, I'm the guy pulling over, like pulling the sign off.
Nice.
So. You know, and I look at it and go, well, I want to change it. So I try to use like earth elements, metal, tar, concrete, because that's, you know, it's all earth elements, metals. Mm-hmm. And you know, and I think it worked out well. I sold a lot. I did, you know, I have a lot of high-end clientele and whatnot. But then, you know, I started kind of trying to go back to using more paints and more hands-on painted canvas, you know, and I'm happier, you know, with those mediums. You know, and trying to, you know, I know that, you know, prior to COVID, you know, I think I was referred as a dark and sexy, you know, I think it's kind of a joke, but it kind of, you know, Gannon's dark and sexy, you know, just dark earth tones, you know, gold, silvers, you know, and that's my clientele, you know, I'm looking at this thing and you know, working with other artists, you know, I was a resident artist with Risk over COVID,
nice.
And we had a fucking blast.
I mean,
just COVID is like the best thing that's ever happened to me. It was like, I mean, it's kind of like, you know how the cliche be like, oh, I'll quit drinking tomorrow or I'll quit smoking tomorrow.
Right.
Well, I've had that same say with my career in a sense, like, you know, like tomorrow, like, oh, I'm gonna, you know, this is the way I wanna go. But
sure.
2 years prior to COVID, I did make a decision to concentrate on my art only, and some of the other things that I do for a living, you know, as we said, staying focused, like getting rid of what might be a very high-end job, a $400,000 job of decorative finishes, to me wasn't the legacy I wanted to leave. And that was something I even talked to my son about, my 17-year-old, you know, he was like 15. I was like, my legacy, I want to leave a legacy. You know, and it's not a financial legacy or fame or fortune. It's really like, what am I doing here? Like, oh, my dad did 100 W hotels and additions and celebrity homes and blah, blah, blah. I want he's an artist, but I don't want to be with that story. Like, oh, he was so talented, but
right.
I want to do it. So I started doing it a couple years ago. So when COVID hit, everyone's like, holy shit, you were preparing for this. I whittled down my company, got it down to nothing. Almost how everyone had to be in ration for like COVID, like getting down to nothing.
Tightened it up, yeah.
So when COVID hit, I was completely prepared. I had a skeleton staff, you know, I was rebranding everything. And that's when I called up Kelly a couple of years ago. I mentioned doing this big wrist sculpture out of concrete. And we were at one of Eddie's shows, Love Los Angeles.
It was the first one. I was there. Yeah.
Not the second one, the first one.
Mm-hmm.
So probably 18 or something.
How are we on time?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, can we talk about Art in the Rendon?
Yeah.
Can you? Because what happened with Art in the Rendon, if you don't know what it is, the Rendon Hotel downtown where Al's bar was.
The Rendon?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know anything about it.
So they invited Garen and I and Jim Evans and other people to come out, and everyone had a room in the hotel.
Yeah.
And Garen had a room.
Yeah.
And I went upstairs. He goes, let me show you what I'm doing, bro. Yeah. He fully transformed this room into like this completely different type of
environment. I don't think people were ready for it.
So tell us what you did.
Okay, so I've been invited to do a group show of 100 LA artists. I don't know if there's maybe hours from out of town, but everyone, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And we each, and the challenge or the parameters of each, we're each given one, I believe it was 100, might have been less, but each artist gets their very own room, and it's here on 7th and Santa Fe at a very 100-year-old hotel that has all this history.
Yeah, where Al's bar was. They did shows back in the day.
Yeah, I mean, it's all crazy history from
there. And there's giant MSK, Retina, Revoke. Yeah. Everyone had, you know, we still have the wall. Coffee's on there too.
Yeah, and so we have, so the parameters for each artist is you can do whatever you want.
So tell us what you did.
So some people come in, took out all of the drywall, and it was exposed to trees growing out of the floors. Mm-hmm. Literally whatever your mind can imagine. So I thought, well, what am I gonna do? I'm gonna bring everything, I'm gonna bring my everything I do here. I'm gonna just bring, this is gonna get a garen, like fucking room. So I'm really into what's called brutalism, which is concrete, architecture, furniture. I work a lot with big, massive concrete sculptures and whatnot, and hence that risky piece or whatever. So, so what I did is I made a king-size bed, headboard, nightstand, all out of concrete. And then I put this, so you walk in this room, it's this big concrete bed, you know, and then with a big fur on it, you know, it looks similar to this, a big fur on it. I made everything myself. The mirror, a chandelier that hung down all with like toilet chain, you know, little balls, toilet chain, chandelier in the middle. I bought two original paintings that I did. We plastered, I think, all the walls like concrete. I brought a skull wall sconce that I did for Slash. Now, little Big Sean bought the house now. So Big Sean just did a whole article on like what is thing on MTV Cribs.
Oh,
he's like,
yeah.
Dude, check out these skulls. So I made these like skull wall sconces. And so I bought the two paintings, the walls, bed, nightstand, painted the sink or something silly. And and then on the hero side of the back of the wall, I hand like the carved like this wall, and it's a sculpted piece where it just looks like a fucking Tyrannosaurus Rex or something. Just came in and just clawed the wall.
Yeah.
I mean, and it looks like just like if you literally just took like a like I don't even know like a caterpillar like almost like a
yep.
some type of hoe or something and just carved out the concrete.
It
just
looked real though. It looked like it was concrete.
Then I silver leafed inside of all the recessed areas and all the top where it wasn't carved out was gloss black. So anything else like just ripped out, I silver leafed inside and then black. So it was just and in a way, like I said, like I might have gone too far for the actual genre of it. It should have been like something that would have been at West Hollywood Edition, like
sounds incredible.
I do like the West Edge design, you know, how like centers, do these, you know, I'm very involved in design world. So I'll do these mirrors and I have a tile line. And I do these insulations where they're for ISID, you know, these things where people pay like, you know, $100 to go for the night. You know, and so I did something that I think was just garen. I mean, it was all me.
So how did
I said it was a little too much over the top. I think they're like, what the fuck is this? They didn't understand.
So that sounds amazing. I guess what I wonder is, how do you know when you're done?
Oh, I have a vision. I mean, Jim Evans gave me a really nice compliment. And he said, you know the difference between you and everyone else is? He's like, you think about what you can do before you do it.
Mm.
So I see the actual finished product. Mm-hmm. I know what the finished product is. I know the quality of work that I need to provide. You know, I did this box, for instance. And there's one thing about art, and this is for people who are watching, this is a jewelry box, and this is like part of this line I started, this LA collection. And I have a lot of clients who just, you know, love everything and everything with, you know, my art on, but at the same time too, they collect jewelry, they collect bags, they're really nice, you know. And so there's a stopping point that you don't want to go too far. And a lot of artists do, you know, wall washing or art or mixed colors. And what happens if you don't have the discipline to stop, it becomes muddy.
Yeah.
It becomes dirty.
Yeah.
And you don't get the vibrant colors. And it's very difficult to know when to stop. But at the same time, to have the discipline to know to go further until it's complete.
Let me ask you a question. There's this high and low part of like, no one to stop.
And then and you need to go further to stop it.
Do you think that comes from comping for clients?
100% professionalism.
Yeah.
100%. My father. I have to give respect to my father.
Yeah, we talk about that too because we've spent our whole lives making clients happy, right?
Sure.
And that's a hard thing to do, executing on behalf of a client. But if you can figure out that little spot, that sweet spot, right? You know, because our work isn't.
Yeah, and I think we all probably can relate to, you know, we've seen works of art or heard, you know, music or whatever that, you know, is... Your reaction is this isn't finished,
right?
Or this is overproduced,
right?
Yeah. I think we have those visceral reactions sometimes. It's like it's too much or it's not enough, And getting knowing when to stop, I think, is such an 100%. Important skill.
It's funny, for some odd reason, and I don't think it's an odd reason, because people say, like, you know, I get this question all the time, like, oh, are you a musician? You know, I went to that Pearl Jam thing last weekend.
Sure.
And I want nothing to do with it.
Right.
Because I was on vacation to try to get away from that kind of stuff.
Did you see Pearl Jam?
No. And it's literally like on the corner. I see
yeah.
Right there, I was at the Ritz. And you know, name dropping, like Sean Penn's there because, you know, he's friends with
sure.
Pearl Jam. You know, and I want nothing to do with it because I'm on vacation. But the point being is, while I'm at the hotel, people are like, oh, are you going to be on, will I see you on stage later? Really nice compliments. You know, of course, I dress the part. But the reality is, I always say, you know, like, I don't understand why they're asking me this. I got like my bum grilling. And,
you know, rats too.
Oh yeah, everything, and I got my fur jacket. You know, I'm dressed to impress. You know, yeah. No shame again. And but the reality is I always say, oh no, I'm not in the music business. Blah, blah. And the reality is that's a fucking lie.
Sure.
I designed and built Tommy Lee's music studio. I built Slash's private studio. I built Scott. Sorry, Scott. Scott, I'll think in a second, studio, which was recorded all of Rob Zombie, Motley Crue. I could probably Ozzy Osbourne. You name the person. I name a song. He's like, oh, I wrote that song.
Yeah.
You know, Scott Humphrey.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And Henry Rollins bought his studio. And I built and designed the whole thing. So in a funny way, and other studios that I just, you know, whatever, you know, I don't know the name of the guy from Rush. You know, it's like, no, it's whatever. So, but you know, like,
yep.
So I think I was like, oh, I'm not really in the industry. But yeah. And I have sat in on, you know, sitting in the thing. So
sure, you are in those way, environments.
I have, yeah. I have
impact people's output yeah. too.
So what's you next know? For Garen Swing?
I think what's next for Garen is I think we want to I want to show my art. I think more just in I want to get out of LA, not in a weird way, but I want to be able to start showing in New York. Uh-huh. I went to New York recently, you know, and it was I got a. Really good response. I mean,
sure.
I had a better response in New York than I did in LA.
Yeah, I get
you know?
It.
I mean, it was fantastic.
Yeah.
I talked about doing some clubs, you know, San Francisco, San Diego, you know, you want sure. to go to
you're
Tokyo.
You're definitely you know? Participating in every love.
Yeah.
Tokyo style love, Oakland style love, Philly style.
I mean, so we want to take that on the road. I mean, so
yeah
like, what I want to do next is go on the road. I want to bring it out to the masses.
Awesome.
I have art, you know, internationally. Mm-hmm. You know, I just did some pieces for Tokyo. I've been there twice. I've
nice.
Know, worked there for like four times.
Mm-hmm. Are we doing a lightning nice. Round?
No? Yeah, let's get to a lightning round.
Okay. Well, I'm getting set ready.
No, this is true lightning round, though. Quick answers.
Favorite city to travel to?
Tahiti. It's a city. No, but like New York is good for me. Paris. Yeah. Paris. Real Paris. It's fucking.
Who's your favorite DJ?
I'll say Yeetho. Why not?
Yeah.
I spent a long time with him. You know what I mean?
Great DJ.
And it's nothing to do with House of Pain.
So I know you say you're not a reader, but what's the last great book you've read or listened to?
It was an amazing book by Nikki Six.
Oh, yeah?
I'm probably going to say it wrong, but it's called This May Hurt.
Yeah, I think I saw.
He gave it to me. Because I work for Nikki also, and he's sober for a long time sobriety, and we had a lot of great talks. He turned me on to a book called The Artisan Way.
Oh, cool.
And then... He's like someone that doesn't know this, but he's like a mentor to me. Because that's what I said. I see these motherfuckers and I'm like, oh, I'm a... Because we talk and he's like,
yeah,
this guy. So shout out to Nikki Six. I'm not even like a huge fan. He's in, I'm not a Motley Crue fan. That's the crazy part.
Yeah.
I'd rather listen to some Smiths. You know what I mean? You know? So we're talking and this guy goes to the gym in the morning. He's got kids, a dog. He's got a podcast, or not, it's actually showing it, XM Radio. Mm-hmm. Yeah, TV show. He's in another band called, like, I don't know, like 98 Degrees or whatever his other band is. So he's in another band. He's in Motley Crue. He's writing a book. He's an amazing photographer. He has a whole book on photography.
Nice.
So here's a guy just doing all this.
Yeah. Yeah.
In a day.
I get it.
And that's what I try to do. I know I could do a million things, and that's the way I roll. Like, it's like, oh, what do you do? Like, I went and dropped off my laundry. I'm like, oh, I did that at 6 in the morning.
Right, yeah, that's not a day.
You know what I mean? So those are people that inspire me. So
I
say mentors more on the idea of seeing like this. And so one day I told him about the reading. He said, this is a short read. So they were like paragraphs and pictures. He's like, hey, this. And the best part was, it was about like addiction and winning and being an amazing person. So for me, it was a short read, pictures to boot.
Love
it. Lightning round, what you got?
What movie do you think you've seen the most in your life?
It's called Blade Runner.
Yeah.
Okay. Number one movie, hands down.
Great.
I mean, just that's it's everything.
Fantastic.
Oh, whoa.
Oh, last one. If I worked for you, what's something I would hear you say over and over?
Fuck.
Okay.
Fuck. Pretty much.
Fuck. Fuck. Fuck.
Pretty much. Fuck.
Man, this is so much fun, dude. I could talk all day.
Yeah, let's get hot, man.
Love the stories. I can't wait to see what's next.
Yeah, I think amazing. I really appreciate the time
and
you guys taking time out of your day to
super
share
fun.
My story and whatnot. And
super fun.
Fantastic.
Eddie, any parting thoughts for us?
Not at all. I mean, I think it was good. You know, it was fun. I'm looking forward to the future because me and Garen have a lot of plans.
Yeah.
The one thing I will say about Garen is he's really thoughtful and strategic about how he moves.
Yeah.
And that's refreshing. You know, considering I spend a lot of time with people that are just walking around bumping into walls and at work sometimes. And
I mean, I think it shows. That's how you've been able to build a successful company.
Yeah,
I
by reframing and let's say just letting things ride the way they do. And yeah, it's a chess game. And I'm calculating, but I noticed by me reframing, everything's worked out beyond my wildest dreams. Because if so I think a lot of things just let it happen.
Yeah.
You know, and not like pay sure. too much mind no. to
the
side vibrations of what's happening in life. I think a lot
that's half the battle, right?
Yeah, especially when you start, because see, misery loves company. So anybody that's fucking doing anything that's slightly not, like it ruffles their feathers, they're like not happy with that because it makes them feel uncomfortable. So when you're successful on any level, it makes people like, whoa, what are you doing today? You're like, I mean, you're going to work. Like, can you just hang out in bed all day? Like, you know, it's like at that very small part. So misery loves company. So it, you have to kind of not, you have to kind of, you know.
Nope. Yo, that was Garen Swing on Rebel Radio. I hope you enjoyed it. I know I did. Shout out to Eddie and Gorilla One. Like I said, hit up Eddie for any art needs you might have. And most importantly, come back next week for more Rebel Radio. Peace.